Grow My Cleaning Company teaches owners of cleaning companies just like you how to grow your company, make more money, and finally take charge of your financial future and your life. This podcast is about automating and creating systems that give you time and money freedom so you can grow like crazy without losing control. Since this is totally free, if you're getting tons of value, want to support us and make sure that you get more of the good stuff, subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast today. Now, on to the show. Hey, Cleaning Nation, Mike Campion here with the lovely, the brilliant, the purple clad, as is her custom, Tracy Thompson. I am really excited about today's episode for a couple of reasons. One of the things I love about doing podcasts is we can kind of respond in real time. And Trace and I and the whole Grow My Cleaning Company team have been talking, and we are recording this May 2021. The government is giving people money to stay home. There is a certainly countrywide, certainly North American, maybe global shortage of employees. And that is worse at the low level, you know, kind of entry level positions, which we are all hiring for and need by the handful. So I wanted to dive in. I'm talking a lot about the tactical, how to get through that, and finding that the people are getting freaked out, overwhelmed. There's such a mess of a headspace. They can't even hear the tactical. So I was hoping I could get with Tracy. We could start with her kind of helping us unwind the stories that we're telling ourselves that are just going to crush us. And then once we get you to the headspace or kind of mental place you need to be, then we can talk through the tactical. Great. How do I deal with this? So the good news is, as we're hearing this recording, the feedback I'm getting from Cleaning Nation is this is a 12 out of 10 in terms of importance. For those of you guys and gals that are listening in the future, the market's not insane. The government stopped paying people to stay home to some degree. It might only be a 7 or 8 out of 10. At no point, if you own a cleaning company, is this going to be a 2 out of 10. So let's dive in. What's this? That's the landscape as I see it, Tracy. And again, they're coming to me for tactical and you for mindset. Give me what you're hearing from Cleaning Nation in terms of what's holding them back from hiring right now.
Well, I hear a lot of things, but the most pervasive is regardless of whether they're focused on, well, I'm not getting enough applicants, or they're not showing up for the interviews, or once they hire them, then they don't show up, or whatever flavor or part of the hiring process they're focused on, that isn't the problem per se. It's not that. It's the other part of that story that they're telling themselves is getting them hung up. And that usually sounds like everything sucks. The platforms aren't performing. It's Indeed. It's this, it's that, you know, oh my gosh, nobody's showing up. So they start catastrophizing, globalizing the language, and they're telling themselves these terrible stories about how it's just awful, terrible. It's never going to get fixed. And then they're off to the races and they can't hear anything about tactics at that point. So that's the bigger problem. Not so much where they are in the funnel.
I couldn't agree more. And it's so frustrating as a coach who just loves my people to see them hamstringing themselves, or you guys, Clean Nation, hamstringing yourselves with, I can't see the forest through the trees. I'm so frustrated with what's going on. I lose sight of what's going on in the world I can't control. I lose sight of the things that I can control. So I'll give you kind of my thoughts, but I feel like when I give this coaching, even to our clients, not just Clean Nation on the podcast, they kind of go the yeah, but. So we'll take turns. I'll kind of give you my thoughts and then you can maybe speak up for how Clean Nation might respond to that and then maybe offer them a more healthy response or more effective response. So I've been, man, on my soapbox, jumping up and down, preaching, doing everything I can. Anyone that'll listen, saying, guys, gals, this is a pivotal point for your cleaning business. You can't choose that. It's just the reality. You can choose how you respond. So when labor is scarce, right? Everything's supply and demand, right? You know, 2 years ago, everyone's like, oh, I can't get any clients. No one's paying attention to me. Cleaning's boring, blah, blah, blah. And then COVID came up and all of a sudden cleaning's in the spotlight. So, you know, with COVID, the demand for cleaning went down for a little bit, and then it went sharply up as we need disinfecting and clean out sort of stuff. With people staying home for extended amounts of time and getting paid, you know, by the government to stay home, the labor supply has dropped. So here's the reality. If you live in a decent sized city, right? I'm in Phoenix. I think the greater Phoenix area has 5 million people. Mm-hmm. I'm making these numbers straight up, but you'll get an idea. Say in the 5 million people, there's 500,000 people. I'm just picking 10% that are in that kind of job market for an entry level job. Let's say things are 10 times as bad as they normally are. I don't think they are. I think they might be twice as hard to hire, right? But it's not 10 times as hard. Let's just say it's 10 times as hard. That means there's only 50,000 people in that job market. Mm. I need 16 and think I'm going nuts. Well, 16 out of 50,000 is still, there's plenty of people. So might it be harder? Yes. Might there be more competition? Yes. Might I have to throw more money at the problem? Maybe. But here's the reality. One, it's one thing when I'm going through something locally, right? Like in my certain company, I've got a bad manager and the culture shot and people are pissed and people are leaving. That's really hard to deal with. I can't ask my clients for more money. But when it's a global thing in nature and you go to your clients and go, there's no labor. You know, there's no labor. I know there's no labor. The labor there, you have to pay more. If here's your new price, right? And if they go, oh, forget it. I'm going to go shopping. There's no labor anywhere to be found. Everyone's dealing with that, right? So you want to take your chances and risk it? Go risk it. Good luck. If not, you're going to be cleaning your own building. And they're going, I don't have any minimum wage people at all either to do it anyway, right? So, you know, it's like when minimum wage goes up and we raise prices, people aren't shocked. They're like, yeah, I guess that's how it works. So if they go, I don't like it, go right to your congressman, right to your senator, right to whoever you think would make the decision. But I'm not the one paying people to stay home. And you know it, and I don't. So we can throw money at this problem because people understand what's going on. It's a global problem, not a local problem, right? If I go to my clients to go, hey, I've got a bad culture. No one wants to work for me. I need to raise prices. That's a tough conversation. You're probably not going to get far. But when I go, you know, I know, the world knows, you can't turn on the news for 2 seconds without hearing how there's no labor out there. We all understand how supply and demand works. The supply is low, demand's high. I'm going to proactively cover your demand and make sure that you're not looking for low wage labor to clean your place. So here's your new price. That said, if you have a problem that requires money, you have money, you don't have a problem, right? So we can throw money at this problem. We got to still do culture and all that sort of stuff. So this is an opportunity. One of two things are going to happen. Most of the businesses are going to go, they're not going to go, I'm willing to pay more. I'm going to focus and just dive in and go, this is the one problem I'm going to solve for the next 60 days. That's all. I'm going to do better hiring. And that's all I'm going to do every day, all day, just hire better people all day, every day. And I'm going to spend more money than all of my competitors. And I end up with all the good labor. There's 50,000. I get my share. No one, everyone else gets the leave-ins, even if it was too expensive, even if I had to spend too much time on it. And when this thing ends, because it will, the government, you know, we can only print money so long. At some point, people are going to have to work if they want to get paid. And if not, we're all out of business anyway, right? If the government's just going to pay people, you know, something's going to change. So at the end of that change, we're kind of standing on top of the mountain. We got this thing solved forever and forever. And a lot of people went out of business. So that's the perspective I have. I feel like when I share that with people, they go, meh, yeah. And they just can't hear it. So Be Cleaning Nation, me, Tracy, what do you think they're hearing, our listeners are hearing, when I kind of share that thought process, and how are they responding that's probably not serving them? And then how would you coach them to respond in a way that's much more effective?
So first thing is, and I know this because I'm hearing it in our mindset coaching sessions, is people are getting really hung up on the part they can't control in a way that is very circular. So it sounds like this, like, but you don't understand, Mike, I've been trying. And you're thinking to yourself as your their coach also, well, of course you've been trying. Yes, we know you've been trying. And then they'll go back, and here's the circular part. I've been trying, and this is the thinking, and it hasn't been working. And then I try some more, and I throw more money, and then that doesn't work. And so nothing works, and there's the circular part. So why should I keep trying? And then there's this defeatist, weird, like fighting reality, fighting what actually is, and spending all their energy and their mindset and their emotions on what isn't working, what can't work, instead of in that whole cycle saying, well, there has to be something else. There's got to be something else I can do, either more, different, better. They're not seeing that part.
I will literally ask questions for data. How much money did you spend on applicants this month? And right. they'll say things like, everyone sucks. And nobody, like, it doesn't matter what question I ask. They have to tell me why life won't work. And it's just, as a coach, it's like, guys, gals, I love you, but you got to stop focusing on, you know, if you're driving fast and you focus on the wall, your car is going into the wall, right? Stop focusing on the wall.
So here's the problem, Mike. What they're thinking is, okay, I'm going 10 miles an hour and it's not working. Why would 50 miles an hour work better? And I guess logically, in a weird way, I guess to a certain point, that seems reasonable. But if you've ever, here's the analogy or the metaphor I like to use. Any of you have ever ridden a bicycle? Okay. And you try to ride really slow, like push really slow, and you're on a bumpy sidewalk and the tire hits every single crack and you fall because you're going so slow through it all. You feel everything. And then we extrapolate out one slow motion movement and assume it's going to get worse and more of it if we go faster and go bigger. The opposite is actually true. And there's where it's counterintuitive. We think, okay, if what I'm doing at 5 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour is not working, then going 50 miles an hour is gonna make it worse. And so they get paralyzed. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense.
So,
or if you're a nerd like me, the DeLorean, if it doesn't get up to 80, whatever miles an hour, you can't jump in time. There's certain things that need a minimum amount of inertia.
Right. So, but again, that's where I better slow down. So Mike, for example, all of you out there that said, but I'm already spending, I think we had a client, you were using this example earlier. It's like, well, we're spending $500. Well, how many people do you want? 17. Well, okay, hold on a minute. Hold. Just logic alone and math alone goes, it's probably not going to work. But there's a disconnect somewhere where it's like, well, if I'm spending $500 and that's not working enough to get me 5 people, then why would spending more get me 17? Do you see total disconnect there?
And here's the problem. So this emotional blinders, it almost feels like, inhibits us from seeing the truth. So I've managed teams of salespeople before, and anytime you're asking for a definitive answer on something they'd committed to. So if it was, you were supposed to make 50 outbound calls yesterday, how many did you make? Anytime the response is anything other than a number, I know it's a problem. Well, but right off the bat, it's never story, 50, right? It's always, they trust me, if it's 50 or 60 or more, they start with, I made 50, and then they'll tell you. So anytime they dodge, or you as a owner, dodge the question in your own mind, what you're saying is, if you are trying to hold me accountable to talking about things I can control, but that sounds like work. I would like to bitch about things I can't control, which makes me feel better. So I guess we really kind of, and it's weird because it doesn't make us feel better. It makes us feel like garbage when you're like, I'm out of control. It's the government's fault. It's Indeed's fault. It's whoever's, it's the jackasses part of my language. It's everyone's fault but mine. And we start talking about, well, what can you do that doesn't feel so good? It feels better to talk about it's the world's fault, which is fine if you want to be a $10 an hour employee. But if you're leading the ship, if you're the leader of this thing, you got to be the ultimate, my fault, I got it, my responsibility, right? At the end of the day, you got to own that thing. And I feel like I'm talking kind of tough, and this isn't a fun, you know, we usually have a lot more fun on the show, but this is a big deal. And I feel like if we're going to let ourselves off the hook with, how much did you spend? How many applicants did you get? What's your process? What's your system? How much? And if you're not willing to have that conversation with yourself or with me, you're never going to find the problem. And so many people are taking an emotional response to a logical problem. So the guy that you use that, you know, had $2,000 or $3,000 of budget required to meet his hiring needs, he was like, I'm doing all sorts of things to get more people to show up. But that was the wrong problem. He was responding because emotionally it was not enough people are showing. That's how he felt. Mm-hmm. But the data was a completely different story. I had another gal in our Next Level program, Renee. She was freaked out about her hiring. And when I forced her, and she had a bunch of stories to tell, I'm like, hold on, we'll tell the stories in a second, but let's just start with the data. At the beginning of the month, how many did you want to hire? Six. Great. This happened to be on the 20th of the day we're having this conversation. How many of you hired so far? She literally told me four. So she was two thirds of the way through the month and she'd hired two thirds of the people that she needed. When I forced her to look at the data, it was fine. It was literally just in her head. And she's like, holy crap. I had no idea. It felt so bad. She felt like, and she was just about to literally stop doing the thing that was working to test this other thing that may or may not have worked and feel garbage about it. So that unwillingness to look at the data is a killer. And I, again, for me, I'm so logical. I don't have the mindset stuff you have. That's why I'm so glad you're here. I just don't get it. So walk Cleaning Nation through. They're like, yeah, if I had to be honest, I kind of feel that where I'm doing that. Why do we feel that way? And how can we move over to looking at this in an effective way that's going to get us the result we want?
So the first thing I want to do is just frame for everybody. Many, many studies have now been done by neuroscientists who study this, that all 100% of our decisions are emotionally based and justified with intellect or logic. Okay, not the other way around. So the first thing we have to acknowledge is that we are making emotionally based decisions, period. The question now is which emotions? It's not, do we use emotions? We do. Absolutely. The question now is, are those emotions running you? Like, are you allowing the emotions either subconsciously or consciously to rule you? So like in the case of Renee, as an example, she was feeling a lot of things, which was clouding her intellect, if you will, clouding the judgment, clouding the facts that were obscured to her because she was so in the emotion of it that she couldn't see straight. So the first thing you got to do, everyone, whenever you're faced with a decision, especially when it's something that's challenging like this, and it's probably been going on for more than a day, is you got to check in. What am I feeling right now? Like, really be honest with yourself. What am I feeling? What kinds of emotions? And it's never going to just be one emotion. There's going to be a mixture. But the ones that become problematic are things like anxiety, fear, anything that sounds like all or nothing. Everybody is this way. You know, those stories and those emotions that connect to fear, anxiety, and trepidation, anything that hesitates, then you know there are some emotions mixed in there that are not, probably not serving you. Right at that moment, you're going, all right, I've got to tune in. And those emotions have stories attached. That's when we need, like Renee, I feel like it's not working. So the very first thing is, I'm afraid. I'm afraid this isn't working. And she starts doubting everything she's looking at. Her whole process suddenly looks broken when it wasn't. So that was a fear response. So immediately, if you're starting to feel that, the first thing is you've got to pull back and check the emotions and say, what story am I telling myself right now that's contributing or connected to that feeling?
So let me ask a clarifying question, because you said something, and I love, you know, having coached thousands of owners, cleaning companies on this years and years and years. I love when I talk with Tracy, I'm like, man, she just blew my mind. So you guys know this isn't scripted. We didn't talk. I mean, this is, I'm just like, yes, what Tracy said. And I don't know how many times we've spoken. Today, I think is she voxed me. Hey, it's a year we've been working together. So you guys have been enjoying and benefiting from Tracy for a year now. And I still get something new. So the big thing I heard, and it just my big dumb brain, I should have known this. 100% of us make, and it's so funny, as a salesperson, I know this, when I'm trying to help people make a decision, I know they're going to make decisions based on emotion. as a coach, it's the same thing. And I'm really just selling them to say, even though I have their money, I'm not selling them to get money. I'm selling them to adopt the ideas that I know are going to help them. Still a sale. So I love identifying that all decisions are emotional, not, and we think like, oh, not me, not all.
Yeah.
Not true. All of them and you and me. And I feel like I'm on the scale of pragmatic versus emotional. I'd say I'm much more pragmatic. So only 100% of my decisions are made by emotion, right? Because I'm on the pragmatic side if I'm being honest with myself. And again, it's so funny that we back it up with logic, which could be so full of crap, right? You can see this in people.
Right, which is why we see such huge gaps in logic. That's when Mike, when you ask them logically questions and they're telling you, their emotions are saying, but you don't understand, this logic makes sense, Mike, until you start pulling it apart and they're like, oh, I guess that logic doesn't make sense.
But sometimes they don't even get it. Like, no offense to all of our flat earth friends out there. You'll see people that have this belief the earth is flat. And it's like, you can be on a plane, you can fly around it, like you can go to the moon. There's all sorts of things that, but their emotion is tied to this thing. And they're not crazy people. I'm guessing they just have an emotion that's tied to this thing. And if someone could help them unwrap it, whichever. So for those of you like, not me, it's you, I promise. Right. So yeah. So the clarifying question I want to ask is, hopefully you guys are all with us and let's just take the journey and just pretend, even if you're like, not me, just for now, just pretend all the decisions, just hang out with us in this premise for a minute. Let's pretend every decision we make is emotional. Mm-hmm. How can we, and you said it perfectly. So as opposed to going, well, screw that, I'm going to go logical, not emotional. I don't think that's really possible, right?
No.
Maybe if we really focus for a minute, we could on this decision, but just, I don't think that's a long-term state. So how do we, A, embrace it and go, all right, if we're wired that way, it can't be all bad, right?
Right.
Emotions, it's not like we're Dr. Spock here and emotions are bad. That they have something to contribute. So how do we make sure, A, that we're focusing or allowing the right decisions or the right emotions to make decisions?
Yes.
And how do we integrate logic in a realistic way, right? Not just go, oh, I'll just be completely logical. It's like, you won't. So how do we live in reality and like, identify what the emotions are good or bad and kind of use that new knowledge to get us where we want to go?
So that's a great question. And the really, let's think about it, step back and not, let's not take anything specific right now. Let's just say just in general, when you've made the best decisions in your life, think back at a time where you made really good decisions. What was your emotional state? Most of us will say that I wasn't in a panic, fear, anxiety-driven state. Most of us recognize that the best decisions that we made, we felt, and this is interesting language, I trusted my gut feeling. I trusted my intuition. I had this positive feeling, like I just knew that this was the right way to go. And it felt positive. It felt inspiring. It felt, and the reason we use that language of trusting your gut feelings, trusting your intuition is because that's evidence that it's emotional. First of all, we feel it. And your optimal state is when you're making positive movement types of decisions is going to be a positive emotion. It's going to feel good versus just trying to plow your way through getting out of feeling bad. So do you see what I'm saying? So fear-based emotions or anxiety or stress cause us to make decisions that seem logical in an effort to try to get out of pain only. And that can be very irrational. So good example is I'm freaking out. I'm trying to hire people. I've got new clients coming on. I don't have enough people to cover the shifts.
I'm going to have to clean tonight.
I'm going to have to go back and clean. Yes. I'm freaking out. I need to hire. I've got people coming in and I'm doing interviews, but in my fear-based mind, I am freaking out. Now, all I'm trying to do at this point is to get out of that intense pain I'm feeling, the fear and anxiety, and I hire the next three people to come through my door. I don't care.
A perfect analogy for this is I was talking to a friend who's a lifeguard, and he said the most dangerous thing in the world is not what he was doing in the ocean, but you go to a drowning person, you would think, oh my gosh, they're going to be so appreciative. They'll follow commands. They're fighting for their love. They'll do whatever you need. He's like, oh no, they will drown you. A lot of our training is what to do. So if you're drowning, and you might even have literally your actual savior coming to you that will save you, and you'll pull him right under with you. Not because you're malicious, you're freaking out. You are in a panic, anxiety, fearful mode, and you'll grab onto anything and inhibit that guy or gal from saving you. The solution's right there, but that freak out. And if you just had hope, oh my gosh, this guy's going to save me. It's going to be okay. I'm just going to relax and wait. That would be super effective. But when you're like, I'm going to die, I got to have a breath, I'm just going to hold on to this guy or gal, you'll drag him right down with you. Thanks for tuning in to today's show. If you're fired up, ready to grow, and want to see if you have what it takes to work with us at Grow My Cleaning Company, here's what I want you to do right now. Go to growmycleaningcompany.com/talk. That's growmycleaningcompany.com/talk to book an appointment to speak with me personally. I'm going to jump on the phone with you to get you crystal clear on where you are now, where you want to be, and how to get you there. Don't walk around in the dark any longer. If you are serious about growing your cleaning company, it's time to finally get the systems in place that you need to grow. We've helped hundreds of owners of cleaning companies not only grow their business and their personal freedom, but give back to their community as well. If that's what you're looking for, head over to growmycleaningcompany.com/talk and book a time to talk with me personally. I can't wait to get to know you and your business.